Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening out there. Jim and Jamal back on the air. As always, we want to say thank you for listening in and tuning in. We got a number of things to talk about today. We're going to talk about from the HR corner side. We're going to talk about a hostile work environment because people get confused about what that is. We're also going to be talking about today a very important topic. It's about a new bill that's being run through the House of Representatives through Congress. It's called H.R. 5383, and it has to do with immigration. And this new bill has to do with how this law is going to impact Department of Homeland Security and how they deal with immigration, illegal immigrants, et cetera. So it's pretty pretty interesting what they're proposing to do here, Jamal. So we're going to see. If we have time, we're going to talk about something else also that has to do with this business about the carrying concealed weapons. We've talked on the show before about that, about not doing it, but we got an email about somebody that says we never explained exactly what all of that means. So we're going to go through some of that if we have time today. So let's get busy. I always like to start out with a shout out. So right now I want to send a shout out to, unfortunately, more police officers that have been killed this week. I mean, as recently as yesterday, they had, you know, two police officers ambushed in New York in the Bronx. And then 2 hours later, at one of the precincts where they walked in and did the same thing. I mean, this is really getting to be out of control. I wish it's something that we could do to mend that relationship between the community and police officers and people not doing this. If you remember last few shows ago, we did discuss about police officers being careful not to get ambushed, et cetera. And since that show, I think it's happened, I don't know what, Jamal, two or three times?
Yeah, quite a few.
You know, so, I mean, this is a major concern. I mean, we depend on these people. And I try not to beat this into the ground, but because this keeps coming up, again, as much as I can get the message out there regarding police officers and respecting who they are, and hopefully some of this will curtail itself, so to speak. Then we had a mass shooting over in Thailand where 20-some-odd people got killed. I mean, you know, this kind of information is just disheartening, you know, all the way around. So want to send a shout out. Don't know if I have any listeners in Thailand, but it doesn't matter. I'm sure there's people here that have relatives in Thailand. So sending out those condolences as well. All right, let's get busy. Let's talk about some of these emails here. Jim, as I listen to the political debates and all the things politically this week, it is disheartening. It seems like we are tearing each other apart. And as President Lincoln said, a house divided cannot stand. Don't you think our situation makes us more vulnerable to attacks from our enemies? Your opinion is important, and thanks. Judy, Memphis, Tennessee. Look, I would agree with that. I mean, we've talked about this before. I think that when you have these weaknesses, it does give people ideas in terms of being able to come after us, et cetera. It seems like we've got a pretty good grasp on things right for the moment. But again, we still hear about these lone wolf situations like the police officers getting attacked last night in the Bronx, et cetera. And we still hear about these active shooter situations as well. But whether or not it has to do with political, all of those kind of things, there's people out there that will say that it has to do with politics. Jamal, I'm sure you've heard that too.
You know what I say? I say calm down. And the reason why I say calm down is because, you know, generally speaking, like, you know, having a big family. America's like one big family. Sometimes we fight with our cousins. Sometimes we fight with our loved ones. Sometimes we fight with our siblings. But let somebody outside of that house come and attack one of your family members, we all band together and solve that issue. Well, we've seen us do that time and time again, whether it's 9/11 or other incidents, other tragedies that's happened. We come together when it's time to. But right now, yeah, there's a fight going on. It appears to be some divisions. But, you know, but at the end of the day, I think we stand united.
Well, I think that's true. And, you know, this is before your time and my time, but that's what happened with World War II. I mean, when the Japanese attacked us. It also happened in World War One, the sinking of the Lusitania that had Americans on board. That drew us into World War One, and then World War Two. I mean, the same scenario. It's true. When you attack us, we are going to come through. So, Judy, listen, I know that it seemed like there's a lot that's going on right now. I get it. It is very disheartening. It's tough to turn on the news this day and listen to these things. But unfortunately, that's just the way it is, and we're going to have to work through it. So do I think it makes us a little bit more vulnerable? The answer is yes. Yes, I do. But like Jamal said, but in the same token, trust me, if somebody really outwardly attacked us, I think that as Americans, we would band together. Not that I want that to be a reason for it. I think we should work it out in different ways without any, you know, us being attacked. Okay, Jim, how is it that all of these states can allow sanctuary cities when the federal government is against the harboring of illegal aliens? I thought that the government laws control over state law under the Supremacy Clause. Just curious. And this person signed it, Curious George, which I found interesting. You know, Curious yeah. George.
One of my favorite books.
What are your favorite? Curious George. You know, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Person's from Mobile, Alabama, actually. Look, let me just tell you something without getting into the history lessons or civics lessons, et cetera. There are certain laws that have been, or powers that have been reserved to the states through the United States Constitution. So the 10th Amendment, to be perfectly honest with you, is the police powers. Is derived by each state. So in this particular case, it's true about the Supremacy Clause, but just keep in mind, there's certain laws that doesn't really apply to. The states still do have a certain amount of power. I'll give you an example. Federal minimum wage is, well, I forget what it is off the top of my head, $10 an hour, whatever it is, but a state could have $15 an hour. So there's an example where two laws differ. The reason for that is that the higher amount, because it's above the federal minimum wage, we'll say, it's perfectly legal. So there's an example about how a state law may be more advantageous to a federal law, so the state law is going to control. This business about sanctuary cities, honestly, you know, the states are going to have a certain amount of flexibility with this. It's just that simple. That's not going to just go away. They have the right to do that. They want to declare themselves a sanctuary city. And, you know, for those who disagree with that philosophy, it's just out there.
Right.
You know, the same way on the flip side of that, where they now have these Second Amendment, you know, sanctuary cities.
Right.
You know, with the right to bear arms. So it is what it is. So I hope that answers your question, Curious George. But, yeah, they can do it. Make a long story short. Okay, Jim, I just heard that some of our soldiers were killed in Afghanistan. Why are we still there? It has been 18 years and we need to get out. Do you agree? Do I agree? That was signed by Jane from Oakland, California. Okay, Jane, first of all, why are we still there? How did we get there? And Jamal, this kind of alludes to what you just said a few minutes ago, because when you hit us, we always punch back.
Right.
All right. And we went to Afghanistan under the Bush administration, 1 month after 9/11. The reason why we went there is because Bush demanded that they turn over Osama bin Laden, who was known to be in Afghanistan at that time.
Right.
And feels that he went ahead and coordinated the 9/11 attack.
Right.
So that's how we ended up sending troops over there. We had 60 or 70,000 troops over there, Jane. So what happened was each administration has actually reduced the amount of troops that we had there. So as an example, way back in 2013, we actually had almost 70,000 troops there.
Right.
And now we're down to about, I think it's like 8,000 troops or something of that nature. So there has been a dwindling of that. But you just have to keep in mind, we just can't leave. Now, we have soldiers over there, but a lot of them over there, like in a training capacity and an advisory capacity to the Afghan forces. So, and not to mention the fact that we have an embassy there. So we're always going to have troops around our embassies, especially, in the Middle East countries. Well, we have them around the world, but there in particular, we're going to have that. So do I agree we should get out? I think with everything, we have to get out at the proper time. And unfortunately, the American citizens, the everyday people are not going to know when that time is. And we do have to leave that up to our government.
I think we take it for granted how good we live over here. You know, I just learned recently, I saw an interview with a guy who was an Iraq citizen when we went to Desert Storm the first time. We was in and out of there, what was it, 30 days, 60 days? We were out of there. But the aftermath of us pulling out so fast was just was horrific to the citizens that lived there. Because any citizen that helped the U.S. soldiers at that time, after the U.S. pulled out, those citizens and their families were slaughtered.
Right.
They were killed immediately. And this one, Saddam Hussein was in office, and we didn't fully take care of business then. And, you know, so it's easier said than done just to pull out. You can't just leave vulnerable civilians like that to the, you know, to the wolves to be slaughtered.
Well, I think that happened during the last administration also when we pulled out, that it was this vacuum.
Right.
Okay, and that's how ISIS grew.
Right.
You know, so I think that we do have to be patient. And the argument would be, obviously, patient. It's been 18 years.
Right. Right.
You know, but it's just what it is. It's a tough scenario with all this terrorism going on in these countries that are suffering behind some of these groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, et cetera. But the good news is that we are, in fact, making headway. So hopefully, you know, within the next few years, we'll be completely out. But we have to make sure that the country is stabilized and that they can, you know, their forces can handle that. So at any rate, Jane, I know it's tough, but let's just hang in there. All right. Oh, by the way, if anybody's interested in anything that we're going to be talking about today, they can call in at 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. You can always send us emails at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. All right. Okay. All right, Jamal. Let's talk about this business about hostile work environment. Now, you know, the business that we're in when we're working with employers. You know, throughout the course of the week, we got a lot of calls from clients regarding this issue of hostile work environment.
It's always a big subject and a touchy subject, and because you know, it's like what is defined as hostile working environment, because some of it's based on perception.
Some of it is based on perception. The other problem is that I think people abuse the terminology.
That's what I'm getting at.
Right. People abuse the terminology. You turn around, look at it, and then to be honest with you, they don't really know what it is. So it really creates this dynamic. So let's break this down a little bit, you know, and talk about, on one hand, what is hostile work environment from a, I want to use the word layperson standpoint, so to speak. Somebody that's not familiar with these types of laws, et cetera. And then let's talk about the legal ramifications of what is a hostile work environment, because it's two separate things, really.
Right.
So I want to give you guys a textbook, you know, sort of textbook definition that I was able to put together for you. So what is a hostile work? It's when an individual in the workplace feels scared, intimidated, or uncomfortable due to abuse or intimidation by a coworker. And that's what creates the so-called hostile work environment. Now, just keep in mind, with any number of behaviors that might create a hostile work environment, any conduct or actions that create an environment in which an employee dreads going to work is generally seen to create such a setting. Now, a hostile work environment is sometimes referred to as an offensive work environment or an abusive work environment. The individual causing a hostile work environment could be an employee, a supervisor, an owner, or even employees from being or even from an independent contractor, is what I wanted to say. And, of course, there are state and federal laws that are in place regarding these things, but here's the deal. The deal is that, and especially in California, and I know we reach out with our audience further than California, but yeah, I'm just going to use California as an example. We get these calls, and, you know, people will use this terminology to be able to either, like, save their job, or you're talking about two people that can't get along, Jamal.
Right.
So you got two coworkers that have a personality conflict, and they want to swear up and down that they're working in a hostile work environment because they can't get along. That makes it tough for an employer because you're trying to separate out some of these things. So when you say, what is a hostile work environment? Okay, dread going to work? There's a lot of people out there that dread going to work. I mean, let's face it, right?
Clocking in alone could be hostile.
Right, just clocking in to go to work. So they say that's a hostile work environment.
I got
to
clock in on time.
I mean, we've had situations where clients have called and said, hey, I told this guy that I'm changing the schedule. He starts yelling and screaming at me that he's working in a hostile work environment because he's either changing the schedule he doesn't like, you know, or he requests a schedule change and doesn't get it. So right away, it's a hostile work environment.
Right.
Come on, people. This stuff is ridiculous. You know, the problem is that with all of these laws, employers are being hamstrung now regarding this issue. And it really becomes, you know, very difficult for an employer to actually get the job done for what they want, because they're constantly now, you know, having to put out these fires. Now, this is general. In general, these people that complain about a hostile work environment. So like I said, that's kind of a layperson's approach.
Right.
But there is the legal piece of this also that you can look at, because when we do seminars for managers and supervisors, as an example, we do talk about the fact that what can create a hostile work environment. And there are a variety of things that you need to be looking at. But I want to let you know, in terms of what, from a legal perspective, and I'm not giving legal advice, I want to make that clear, all right? But there are federal laws out there, since we talked to a national audience. So the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has set up their standards. So if anybody ever has any doubts about whether or not they're working in a hostile work environment or the classifications, they can always call the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or the EEOC. You know, so is what we're talking about here. And hostile work environment laws protect employees from facing retaliations for reporting violations of anti-discrimination laws. So that's an easy one for anybody to understand. But the laws governing harassment and discrimination in the workplace are civil in nature, meaning that a victim has a right to file a civil lawsuit. I think everybody knows that one. And if any of these laws, you know, impact them, and they get violated, so to speak, it's their right to do so. So we're not arguing about that aspect of it. So let's make that clear. So just understand, though, if you're making an allegation about a hostile work environment, the victim generally must have to prove certain things. So I want to clarify that so you fully understand it. And that is, I'll just give you a few of these. The hostile acts discriminate against the victim based on, like, age, sex, religion, race, disability, marital status. So those are the categories. So when you're talking about hostile work environment for discrimination, you've got to look at it in terms of, I'm in a protected class group. Sexual orientation, as an example, disability, medical condition, pregnancy, whatever the case may be, gender. So you're taking an adverse action against me, all right? You're saying things, you're doing things. That's what creates, quote unquote, this hostile work environment, all right? Race. The acts were severe enough to disrupt the employee's work or productivity. Well, I don't know about that one. They say that that's one of the criteria. The reality is sometimes there's a lot of reasons why people don't do their jobs. They may not like the job. This could be a lot of different reasons, but they say that the acts were severe enough to disrupt the employee's work. You know, I don't think it takes much. Well, never mind. I was going to say, no, that's okay. I'll stay away from that. The acts were continuous. Let me explain. What we mean by continuous, out there in the legal profession, the words severe and pervasive get used. Severe and pervasive. And that means it's something that keeps going. All right. So it's not like a one-time thing. Like, you know, Jamal, I get upset with you about something. And, you know, right away it's a hostile work environment. No, they don't really look at it like that. If I keep doing it over and over and over again.
Right.
That's what we mean by severe and pervasive. You know, so, and the employer, all right, which has been advised of the situation, fails to intervene. So that goes back to what I was just saying. So here's a person that makes the complaint. The employer's been advised, but yet the employer does not do anything. So now is what happens from that is that it's creating that severe and pervasive work environment, or as you may call it, a hostile work environment or an abusive work environment, because the employer is letting that kind of behavior continue. Now, the difficulty for employers sometimes is that you end up with two situations. This person on the one hand is saying, hey, I didn't say that. And then the other person is saying, yes, you did. So a lot of times the employer is caught in the middle with some of this. And who do you believe? That's where I tell employees what you got to do is remain neutral. Don't take sides, first of all, because then you'll alienate people. Try to work it out. I'm talking coworker to coworker now. When it's a manager with an employee, then that's a whole big, you know, that's a whole different story.
Right.
Because, you know, okay, Jamal.
You know, I want to give you a shout out real quick, because I just read your book, Walking on Eggshells. And I think that's a book that every manager should have. And it addressed a lot of things that you just mentioned on how to handle these uncomfortable situations. Managers can't shy away from it. Like you just said a second ago, you know, when you have two people that don't agree with each other, don't take sides. Listen to each person separately, you know, and take these things and make sure you repeat back to them so they understood that you understood what they were saying to you. And I really recommend that for a lot of people to get that book, Walking on Eggshells, because that will help solve a lot of these issues. Just stick to your policy and be consistent.
You know what, Jamal, I appreciate you mentioning that. Those out there that are listening, I did not tell Jamal to say that.
He didn't.
But I'm glad he finally read it. That book's been out about 4 years now. He's telling me he just read it. So,
hey, man, I'm coming to the light. Man.
Yeah, coming to the light. Right, there you go. So it's like, okay. But just to let you know, people that are listening, it is on Amazon. All right? All three of my books are on Amazon, actually. My first book was on there, Right to Counsel. Second one is The Walking on Eggshells. And then the Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips is on Amazon also. So they're all cost-effective. But the one, again, the one that Jamal just mentioned is a very good one for helping resolve workplace-related issues, though. That's really the only business book I wrote. Well, I don't know. You could say the Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips.
Yeah.
Although that does apply to everybody.
No, but this one, I think Walking on Eggshells is a direct impact on the everyday culture of being a manager, or if you want to become a manager. That would be a good start and a good read to learn some things.
It sold a lot of copies so far, so that's the good news from that standpoint. Okay, look, that gives you roughly an idea. But I'm gonna leave this last piece on this hostile work environment thing, because one of the things that they do say is that the victim, okay, that's the person claiming a hostile work environment, that person has to reasonably believe, okay, that they felt, because sometimes people don't always say something.
Right.
All right? And that's the bad side.
It is.
So it was what they say is that the person has to reasonably believe that tolerating the abusive behavior was necessary for continued employment. Look, most employers, I would hope, have in place a non-retaliation program. If they have that, then that person should feel more comfortable. So some of this, Jamal, goes back to how they manage the business.
True.
You know, what kind of owner are you? What kind of vice president are you? What kind of manager are you? You know, we want people to work in a good environment. Quite frankly, the message to employers is you don't want to get sued.
Right.
So, you know, so for any of you that are managers or supervisors or business owners out there, you need to wake up to this, okay, because the liability is just not worth it anymore. And managers can be sued personally now.
Well, I think that's important. I think that's why it's important for managers to develop a business relationship with their team. You know, so you could talk to everybody on an everyday basis, make them feel comfortable to talk to you. Maybe if somebody is in a hostile environment and that person that's the victim of it doesn't report it, maybe the person next to them will. Like, hey, I think you might want to check this out. Something could be brewing that we don't need to happen, because it affects not just the people involved, but the people around them. So I think it's important for managers to really stay on top and just say, check out their body language. Something wrong, something's not right. Normally they're talkative and they're not talkative today. You know, be proactive and don't shy away from that.
Sounds like a plan. At any rate, hey, let's turn our attention to this other issue. It's called HR 5383 out there, people. Now, look, we don't get into talking about politics, okay? So I want you to understand from the outset that this is not from a political message. But this is a message from, going back to what we talk about with domestic terrorism and watching what we're doing, who can come here, who can stay here, you know, because we also want to secure our borders. And this is probably a direct reflection on making sure that we're securing our borders. Now, look, there are people out there where this is a very sensitive issue because of the fact that, you know, they have family members from other countries that are coming here you know, are facing different trials and tribulations when they get here or trying to get here. You know, we get all of that. So we're not taking sides about who's right and who's wrong in this. The only side that we're taking is that we want all Americans to be safe. Right, Jamal?
Right, absolutely.
You know, so it has nothing to do with where they're coming from, et cetera. But now the House of Representatives, which is Congress, has come out with this new bill. And they really, it's an act that they're coming out with that they're calling the New Way Forward Act. So if any of you want to look that up, a buddy of mine, one of my associates, kind of brought this to my attention a few days ago. And I've been hearing some little things on the news about it, but I really took a closer look at it because he said, hey, you need to take a closer look at it. And quite frankly, that's what I did. Now, as much time as we would like to have, to go deeper into this. We're probably not going to be able to do that. But as usual, we try to encourage people. You know, we need citizens to be more informed about what's going on out there. And I'm not saying right, wrong, or indifferent, because there's always going to be these differences of opinions.
Right.
All right. But this particular act concerns me from a number of different standpoints. Let's put it that way. And I'm always going to say that the law enforcement agencies need to cooperate with each other. But this act right here, to me, goes against that. And that's what my concern is, you know, to a certain extent. Now, it's very detailed, but we're not going into all of the act, but there's some pieces of this that I just want to, you know, talk about. Now, one of the things that they're doing, and one of the very first ones, is phasing out private for-profit detention facilities and use of jail. So what they're saying is that these secure detention facilities. So beginning on the date of enactment of this act. Now, look, this has not been passed yet. So just remember, it has to pass through the through Congress first. All right. It depends on whether they pass it. And then from there, it moves to the Senate for final approval. So keep that in mind as well. But beginning on the date of the enactment. So if this gets enacted, is what they're telling the Secretary of Homeland Security is going to may not enter into or extend any contract with any public or private for-profit entity that owns or operates a detention facility for use of that facility to detain aliens in the custody of the Department of Homeland Security and shall terminate any such contract not later than 3 years after the date of this enactment. So you see what they're doing? They're shutting down these facilities, which to me is going to be a problem, because if you have a lot of these facilities, then it's open where you can house people. You start shutting those down, then you know what the ultimate goal is going to be, is that these people are not going to be in detention facilities because you can't hold them, which means they're going to be out and about.
Right.
So that to me is a concern. Now, they also talk about procedures for detaining aliens, and that's their words, not mine. They're talking about on a warrant issued by an immigration judge or pursuant to this particular section, the Secretary of Homeland Security can arrest an alien and in accordance with the section may pending a decision on whether the alien is to be removed from the United States. So it's what they're doing with that is that, okay, the person going to be out on a bond, all right, and they are addressing the business about a bond as well, because they're saying if the person doesn't have the financial means,
right,
okay, to be on a bond, okay, then that's one of the things that they're going to take into consideration. They should be released to their own recognizance. Now, again, because of the fact that our borders aren't as strong as they should be, this means that terrorists, to me, can still get here, all right? They're technically an illegal immigrant or an alien, and now they're free to go out and do whatever they want to do. Now, the general focus that people have with this, in my opinion, they want to refer this all to, you know, the Latino community. But my concern is greater than that.
Right.
All right, because we have a lot of people from a lot of different nations that are coming up through our southern border. So I want to make it clear I'm not just talking about people from the Latino community with this.
Wasn't there something recently, like not pinpointing, but like you said, in respect of not just being a Latino community, something happened with the Asian community recently?
Well, Jamal, it's the Asian community. It's the Somalian. I mean, there's a lot of them. I mean, there's a lot of people that are coming up, and some of those people are coming here. Are coming here to hurt us, and they're talking about putting these people out, you know, on the street basically, because they you know, I mean, it's just what they're proposing. I'm going to leave it like that. But
are the ones that they're releasing, are these people that didn't commit like a violent felony?
Well, you know what? I'm going to bring that up also. Okay. I'm actually coming to that. Okay. You know, in a few minutes. But now, with the other thing that they're doing. Is that, you know, there was a big problem with the children.
Right.
Okay. So one of the things this does is that this law shall not apply to an unaccompanied alien child. They said with that child needs to be transferred to the custody of Health and Home Services, Human Services. So I do agree with that.
Right.
I mean, if there's a child here somehow, another child's here by themselves, whatever the case may be, I think that's a whole different situation. I don't think the children need to have the protection. Now, is what also happens with these children is that people are bringing the children over here and they're bringing them over here for the trafficking.
Right.
Okay. They use them for sex and things of that nature. Right. So you may end up having a raid, so to speak, and now you've got these children.
Right.
So they need to be put in protective care.
Correct.
So the act is at least saying, look, in these situations, it might be a little bit different, which
right.
makes sense. Would make sense.
Right.
Now, these custody and bond determinations, the initial determination as to whether or not somebody that's been taken into custody, they're saying that you got to make an initial determination on them within 48 hours. You know, in terms of the status. And that's a little bit tough. And especially if you're talking about thousands, okay? I mean, just look at this caravan situation. These people are going to come up in here. You'd have thousands of people. How are you going to get through the court system that fast with thousands of people and say within 48 hours after taking them into custody, the Secretary of Homeland Security has got to make an initial custody determination with regard to that person. And listen to this. They got to be, so the determination that they make
right.
has got to be in writing. Does our government move that fast? Our government doesn't move that fast. You got to be kidding me.
Right.
Within 48 hours of each one of these people. So what is that going to mean? They're going to have to put on other people? How are you going to get that out that
so
fast?
So they move this to a why bother situation.
Well, that's why? But you're right. They could turn around, look at it, and say, why bother?
Why bother?
You know.
Right.
Now check this out. Part of this also says that if an alien seeks to challenge the initial custody determination, the alien shall be provided with the opportunity for a hearing before an immigration judge to determine whether the alien should be detained, which hearing shall occur no later than 72 hours after the initial custody determination. So what they're saying is they got 48 hours, right?
Right.
So here's the 48 hours that's in writing.
Right.
They're saying if the person disagrees with that, that means within 72 hours, that's 3 days, they got to turn around and have a hearing.
So how does this work, like, in terms of them coming into contact with the police in the first place? Or is this a situation where they've been, like, maybe
they probably have
up,
been picked up.
Over,
oh,
picked up.
Well, I don't know that it's so much pull. Look, I think it's what's happening is when they're coming across the border and they're catching them.
Okay.
I think that's probably what we're talking about here because they're illegal. And it could be, but remember, they could be pulling somebody over, like you said, and now they find out this guy's been on the list. You know,
right.
We've been looking for him because those situations happen also.
Right.
So to me, it doesn't differentiate between that. It just talks about illegal immigration.
Right.
You know, which I find very interesting that they even use those words, you know, but, you know, because normally is what they're saying, it's not illegal because it's not a crime. So why are you calling it illegal? So it's interesting that they're using these kind of words, quite frankly.
I remember in Arizona a few years ago. I mean, they caught a lot of hell because some of the laws that they passed, if they come in contact with a person of Latin descent, that they would check them for their ID, which you're supposed to have IDs on you anyway. You know what I mean? But I know there was a lot of controversy behind that in Arizona.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all. You know, if anybody wants to call in and comment on this, the number is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. Because I know there's a lot of general feelings out there, because we get emails from people about some of this stuff. You can't put it all in the air, and I hate to keep beating it into the ground. But here's a situation now where this is a law that's pending. So it's very interesting. Now, they also talk about the fact that there's a hearing under this particular act that there should be a rebuttable presumption that the alien should be released. The government shall have the duty of rebutting this presumption by clear and convincing evidence based on credible and individualized information that establishes that the use of alternatives to detention will not reasonably assure the appearance of the alien at removal proceedings, or that the alien is a threat to another person in the community. How are they going to do all of this that quick?
Right.
You know, and the fact that the alien has a prior conviction, because now this goes back to what you were just saying, Jamal. It says that the fact that an alien has a prior conviction or a criminal charge pending against the alien may not be the sole factor to justify the continued detention of that alien.
See, this is where I start to disagree. They're making it way too complicated. I like the simplified version better that we used to have. You know, if you come in contact with law enforcement for a crime that you committed, then we should do things based on that in that situation and go from there.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, to me, why are we differentiating between somebody that's a citizen and a non-citizen? I mean, when you think about this, this is giving more protections, I hate to say it, okay, to illegal people who are breaking the law by even being here, And now you have American citizens that aren't getting some. I mean, look, let me just back up. Yes, in our judicial system, you have a right to a speedy trial and all of that. But it's not 3 days.
Right. Right.
I mean, give me a break. And you don't have to put in writing.
It's almost become an imbalance as if they actually receive better rights than an American citizen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And 48 hours? Hell, I can tell you right now, as police officers, they can hold somebody right now for 3 days.
Right.
Okay, before they have to really do anything with some of this. You know, so these guys are 48 hours. And can you imagine if we had to give every suspect that we arrested within 48 hours? This is why you arrested, and here it is in writing?
I'm sure they would appreciate that, though.
I'm sure their attorney would. But listen, but there's another part of it. You start putting things in writing, you could be held to that, too.
That's true.
Okay, I could tell you, when I was on the police department, we were writing these reports. Those reports had to be accurate. I mean, we had to take time writing those reports because there's a writing that could end up being in court, and the things that you have in that writing can make a big deal.
Right.
You know, make a big difference, rather.
Let me ask you, when you were in law enforcement, how did that work when you come across somebody or pull somebody over, come in contact with somebody that that may have been not here legally?
But you know what? On the everyday scale, that's not what happened.
Okay.
Okay. Look, ICE and they're on a federal register and there's a warrant out for them.
Okay.
That makes a difference because there's a warrant out for them. But the average guy who you pull over, you're pulling over for a traffic situation.
Right.
So us having probable cause to pull because a taillight is out or they made an illegal U-turn.
Right.
Well, first of all, if they've got a driver's license, you're hooking them up or giving them a ticket based upon the illegal U-turn. You're not doing a hardcore search.
Right.
The only time that you're really bringing them in, if you have to arrest them for something and now you get their fingerprints and maybe their fingerprints are in the system.
Got you.
Okay. Or the other side of the coin with that is that when, as an example, let's say that there's a hit out on the person, or better yet, they don't have a driver's license.
Okay.
So now they're driving illegally. It's a misdemeanor.
Right.
Okay, so a misdemeanor, because a misdemeanor occurs in our presence, we're able to arrest them.
Wait a minute. You said a hit out on somebody. Can you clarify that? Because that could mean a couple different things.
Yes, what we're talking about is that we get back a positive, on this person, on this particular person, that there's a warrant out for this person's arrest. Now, if it's on a federal side, because they've dealt with this person before, and he's evaded law enforcement because he's been arrested, he's not showing up. So let's say, to go back to what you were talking about, the guy's illegal, all right? But he had to go to court and it was a failure to appear.
Right.
And now they turn around and issue a warrant for his arrest. Yeah, that could very easily come back and now we've got him. And
so it's a hit on your computer system saying his name is,
Right. Go from there, At any rate, so that's what we're talking about. Now, one of the things that they're talking about with this business about this criminal charge. Now, they're also breaking it down to say that the criminal charge has to be, if you're going to hold them, it has to be for a serious, crime type of thing.
Right.
But they're saying that what they're defining as serious is somebody that has done time of at least 5 years or more.
Oh, wow.
Now, 5 years or more, I mean, I'm looking at that saying, wait a minute. You could have a DUI that's less than that.
Right.
I mean, you could have a lot of crimes because of the fact that they plea bargained it out, maybe did 3 years.
Right. I don't even imagine like carrying a weapon or I don't even think armed robbery for the first offense you get more than 5 years, do you?
It could be. It could be if they never did anything like this before.
Right.
But, when we go back to this bond situation, I want to digress for a second. We were talking about this bond situation. Look at what's going on in New York right now. They're releasing people out on bonds, without bonds, rather. They're just letting them out. No bail, no nothing.
Well, I told you my feeling on that. I told you I agree with it in a sense. And I told you because of the story about somebody being held in jail for a long period of time that didn't have any money to get out. That was in there over a year being beaten up and everything else.
Those situations are sad, Jamal, and you have mentioned it before. But the reality is, how many people has that happened to?
Right.
And if you get ready to tell me a bunch, I need to hear some statistics, not just about one guy.
Well, if it happened to you, you wouldn't be happy. So the one person or the family member that has happened to, that's one too many as far as I'm concerned. So, but once again, those are petty crimes. If somebody's being held for a serious felony or violent offense, okay, I can understand that more.
You know, again, you know, and I've mentioned on the air before, the system that we have is not a perfect system.
No, it's not.
Okay, so these sad stories are going to happen, just like some of these guys have been in jail for something that, you know, crime they didn't commit.
Right.
I get all of that.
Right.
You know, but to me, are we going to do all of this behind the handful, so to speak? Okay, it could be more than a handful. You know, and I understand everybody's rights have to be protected.
Yeah.
Look, my book, The Right to Counsel, that was what it was about.
Right.
He was a serial killer.
Right.
Okay, but his rights had to be respected just like everybody else's.
But in all fairness, if it's simple misdemeanors, they're not a danger to the community.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me just tell you, that a lot of times now is what we're doing, is what they've been doing, and I don't know since I've been out before what they're doing now, but we cite people out.
Right.
Like a guy's driving and okay. He's driving illegally, Jamal. We'll right. cite them out right okay. there. With a ticket.
Right.
And just give them a notice to appear.
Okay.
The problem is that, especially if they're illegal and they know they're illegal.
Right.
And the date they're supposed to be in a court.
It might be a little hard to find.
It might be a little hard to find.
Right.
Okay. So that's part of the problem too.
Okay.
So, I mean, remember, we at that point, we would not have fingerprinted them or done any of that. We just cited them out in the field. It's a misdemeanor. Like smoking marijuana, it just used to be a ticket.
Right.
Okay. Just write them up. Here it is. You know, I'll see you on this date, you know, end of story. But the reality is that some of these people who know they're illegal, man, they're not gonna say, oh yeah, I'm gonna show up.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing about it is if they showed up for that ticket, nobody would be there to necessarily hook them up and take them away.
Right.
But the idea of them even going to court
is
not a very pleasant, you know, situation at all. So at any rate, so I don't know. I just look at it and say, okay, we just do the best we can with it. Now, there's some other things in here. You know, they also have in here about this bond determination, so I want to get to that, too.
All right.
You know, where it talks about in the case that the immigration judge makes a determination to release an alien on bond, the immigration judge shall consider for the purpose of setting the amount of bond. Okay, the alien's financial resources and ability to pay the bond without imposing financial hardship to the alien. They're all going to claim that.
Right.
I don't have any money, Judge. Okay. Yeah, right. Just release them.
Right.
Now, this other one, when you and I were talking about it before we came on the air, and that is special rule for vulnerable persons and primary caregivers.
Right.
Okay, here we go. So, in the case in which an alien who is the subject of a custody determination under this particular act is a vulnerable person or a primary caregiver, the alien may not be detained unless the government shows, in addition to the requirements, that it is unreasonable or not practical, okay, to place the individual in a community-based supervision program.
Wow.
So who wouldn't claim to be a caregiver?
Right.
You could claim to be a caregiver for anybody.
Tell you something, I'll claim all of the above.
but wait a minute. But let's talk about what is, you know, let's just talk about what's a vulnerable person.
Right.
Because I talk about caregiver. Caregiver is easy.
Right.
But their definition of a vulnerable person means any individual who is under 21 years of age or over 60 years of age.
Right.
Now, a person over 60 is probably not going to be a caregiver. They're probably going to have somebody being a caregiver for them.
Right.
Not to say that some people, 60 is a little bit lighter, okay? But you understand what I'm saying.
I'll get you.
You know, but you're saying under 21 years of age. So a guy that's 19 or 20, he's a vulnerable person. So I get that. Next one for vulnerable person is somebody who's pregnant.
Right.
I kind of get that one. It depends on how long, far along they are and things of that nature. I can go with that. But listen to this next one. Identifies as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or intersex. Now, first of all, I'm not even sure what intersex even means, okay? But, you know, some of these things on here, lesbian, gay. So in other words, what you're telling me is this person now has to admit. Or how do you find this out? So remember, the judge is making this determination. So what do? They walk into court and say, oh, by the way, I'm a vulnerable person because I'm gay?
Right.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
You know? That doesn't make sense to me. Now, the other side of the coin is you look at these and say, what about American citizens?
Right.
I'd love to be like, well, not me, because I don't get say the general, be they were walking the court and say, hey, I'm vulnerable.
Right.
You know, they pick me up for whatever. I want to go in there and say, I'm vulnerable. Am I going to get the same courtesy here? This act doesn't address that.
Right.
They're not changing the laws for everybody. And this business about also if they're a victim or a witness to a crime. Well, okay. So now we're going to put them in protective custody. Well, you know, we put people in protective custody before. Right. But how does that come out? All right. Now, here's another vulnerable person. A person has filed a non-frivolous civil rights claim in federal or state court.
Right.
What the hell is that?
Is that to ensure that they're not being retaliated against?
Hey, wait, it doesn't say against the government.
Right.
It just says has filed a non-frivolous civil rights claim. A civil rights claim could be a hotel that doesn't give you your civil rights or violates your civil rights, as an example.
Right.
Okay. So who knows? You know. And again, some of these things, they're not defining some of this stuff.
Right. I was saying that in the sense of like, you know, a hotel. Let's say a hotel owner, a big hotel chain, they have like the power and the money to like, you know what, this person's suing me. Let me go pay some people to push the issue on this person being deported because they're not supposed to be here anyway. And is that the
but wait a minute, but I'll tell you this. You know, when we go to like the workers' comp claim or hearings or labor board hearings and things like unemployment hearing, you can't even mention the fact that they are illegal.
Right.
So it's very difficult.
Right.
You know, to even be able to bring the issue up.
Right.
You know. Here's the last one on this vulnerable person, a person with serious mental or physical illness or disability. Now, what are they going to be doing? Getting doctor's notes? I mean, you know what's going to happen. If somebody wants to get out,
right?
Hey, I've got a doctor's note.
Right.
Okay. And you know that they can go to their friendly doctor that will tell them anything. Right. It doesn't make any difference.
Right.
So some of this, you know, I have a real problem with this, with some of this. Now, the last one that I want to get to has to do with, I think, the most serious situation. Oh, well, let me just say about this conviction of an aggravated felony. Okay, so this actually, only an alien who has been convicted of an aggregated felony, Jamal, this goes back to what I was saying a few minutes ago, for which term of imprisonment of not less than 5 years was imposed, shall be considered to have been convicted of a particularly serious crime.
Yeah, I think that one's extreme.
Now, the last one, because we got this last few minutes here, Title V of this act is a prohibition against performance of immigration officers' functions by state and local officers and employees. So what are they talking about? The officers and employees of any state or any political subdivision of a state are prohibited from performing the function of an immigration officer. Prohibited from performing the function of an immigration officer in relation to the investigation, apprehension, transport or detention of aliens in the United States or otherwise assist in the performance of such functions.
See, that once again, that's going to that other extreme, man, because law enforcement of any kind should all be able to help and assist one another in the time of need.
Well, they take it one step further, Jamal. Listen to this. Civil immigration warrants shall not be made available to the officers or employees of any state or any political subdivision of a state through the National Crime Information Center database or its incorporated criminal history databases. Federal, state, and local law enforcement officers are prohibited from entering into the National Crime Information Center database or its incorporated criminal history databases information that relates to an alien's immigration status, the existence of a prior removal, deportation, or voluntary departure order entered against an alien or any allegations of civil violations of the immigration laws. Any information described in this paragraph that is in the National Crime Information Center base shall be removed from such database not later than 90 days after this enactment is in.
Wow.
Now think about that. You got to be kidding me.
So once again, let's go back to what I was saying earlier. Did they make it in a situation? Why bother in the first place?
You know what? Homeland Security is going to continue doing their job and do Absolutely. It any way that they can.
Absolutely.
But you're talking about passing this now and making these laws, okay? Right. And, you know, I'm looking at this strictly from making us safe out there, the things they're doing. I'm not saying, because I don't want to get the hate mail, that everybody out there that's an illegal immigrant is going to be some kind of thug or some kind of criminal.
Right.
But to me, how do you put these laws in place? American citizens don't get these kind of considerations to all practical purposes. I mean, we got our laws in place, et cetera. Don't get me wrong. But I think this is really taking a stretch
right.
for somebody that's here illegally in the first place.
Right.
You know, and again, they've mentioned these kind of words themselves in there, but still, I just don't get it, man.
Right.
I just don't get it.
And just to reemphasize what you said earlier, this is on all illegal immigrants.
Yeah, it's just not people from Mexico, Central America, South America. They're from all over the world because you got people from the Asian communities that are coming up here. Somali, I mean, all over the place. So it's not
Middle East. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
You know, Middle Eastern, exactly. Right. So, at any rate, I don't know. This hasn't been passed yet. We'll see what happens. It's in the House. It'll probably get passed, and it has to go to the Senate. We'll see. All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts and Jamal on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join us next week. Hey, do me a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, and be safe. But more importantly, be a reluctant victim.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.